Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, you're very welcome along. So we're looking back at the weekend's rugby. Brian O'Driscoll, you're there.
I am. Hi, Joe.
How you doing? Thanks for joining us. April 20th, Saracens against Munster at the Ricoh Arena. And then 21st, Aviva Stadium, Leinster against Toulouse. It was, really, just as an overview, it's often talked about as one of the best rugby weekends, and it lived up to its billing, from real traditional knockout rugby in Edinburgh to an electric game in Dublin that evening. And then I think, you know, you were on both games. We may have surpassed it all in Paris. It was just an outrageously good weekend.
Yeah, we didn't think that we could outdo the intensity and the ferocity of the Leinster-Ulster game. But what we got in Paris in La Défense Arena was really something special, and particularly the way it unfolded with Zach Holmes being sent off after 20 minutes and yet Toulouse still finding a way to get the job done. It was the first time I've ever been there, and it is nothing short of spectacular. It's a treat for any rugby fan, irrespective of whether you like wrestling or not, or whether your team is playing against them. I would recommend a trip over there. It's, you know, the rugby's almost a sideshow. It's nearly like the Hong Kong Sevens, that if you get bored, you watch a bit of rugby. There's, you know, even during the stoppages, it doesn't feel as though there's ever any time where, you know, players are recovering, because there's always something going on. So the energy that brought alone, along with the quality of the game, made for unbelievable viewing. And it was one of the best quarterfinals, one of the best rugby weekends I've seen in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I suspect Leinster won't mind not paying a visit this time around. Massive sighs of relief. The difference between Toulouse and Dublin and Racing in La Défense Arena is beyond massive.
Well, obviously, I don't think the game is allowed to be played there. They have to play. They get home country.
Do you know what? They've changed the rules.
Has that gone to semi-final?
As of this year, yeah. Only as of this year. So if your stadium is over a certain capacity, you can host it in your home venue.
25,000 or something. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Grand. Well. Yeah. In some ways, it's great. In some ways, it's disappointing. That is. Wait for a year or two, and you get them. They get them in the group stages, but. Mm. Toulouse at home is a much easier prospect than Racing over there, because of what's happened earlier in the season, because they'll feel as though they can get that done, and because of the comforts that come with playing in the Aviva. So, it's not the lesser of two evils, because I do think it's the easier fixture, but there's no doubt that Toulouse will bring a huge confidence derived from that performance in Paris. And the ability to be able to stay in touch, with one man down for an hour. That's a phenomenal achievement. But there were some really outstanding performances, forwards and backs from a Toulouse perspective. Their defence is mean. It's the best I've seen in a long, long time from any French side. And if they can build a performance on that in the Aviva and make Leinster make it difficult for Leinster to score, they have some real attacking prowess and great passers of the ball, and they'll create opportunities for themselves. So it will make for a fascinating fixture in 3 weeks' time.
We'll touch more on Toulouse in a moment. Let's look back on the weekend then, start with the Aviva Stadium. People, I felt, on the day were talking this game up, and talking about the elements of a derby game, and there's a Leinster contingent at Ulster who are going to be out to prove them wrong, and Ulster will have been planning for this for a long time, this game. And yet, I don't know, the closeness of the game still probably took lots of people by surprise. Were you expecting it to be that close? Were you expecting Ulster to do such a number on Leinster for huge parts of this game?
I thought it would be a one-score game. I really did. I looked at that Leinster team when it was announced, and irrespective of what form Johnny Sexton's in, with him not on that team sheet, I think that galvanizes any opposition and gives a confidence to them. And I think Robbie Henshaw is an enormous loss. James Lowe not starting because of the overseas ruling. Of only being able to have two. With Devin Toner's injury, you have to play Scott Fardy. So if Leinster were there for the taking, I felt as though there was potentially a slight vulnerability to that Leinster team, the first I've seen in a couple of years. And so you match that with the mental aptitude that you felt Ulster were going to deliver, that it was a freebie for them. But when you get that right and you bring a ferocity and an intensity that I expected them to bring, I thought it would be a close game. I called it as a 7-pointer. It ended up being a 3-pointer. And in many respects, Ulster will really feel as though they left it behind, because Leinster weren't great, but they didn't allow them to be great either. And they shut them down, and they won collisions, and their blanket defence was brilliant, and they nullified them where, you know, for the most part, except for, you know, that try ultimately and giving away a couple of penalties.
Ulster made 220 tackles. Dan McFarlane talked afterwards about how for weeks they'd been talking about back on your feet straight away when you make a tackle. And there was a real, you know, there was line speed about that defence as well. Did they take a touch of the England game plan from the Aviva?
Yeah, I think all teams are going to adopt that policy of trying to slam the gate shut and not play. You know, as soon as you start drifting, you concede your inside shoulder and you rule out a dominant tackle. So if you come up hard and straight, you're going to be the aggressor in the collision for the most part. And that collision happens on your terms. So I thought they really got that part right. I thought the two centres were very, very good in Darren Cave and McCluskey. Really big performance, particularly Darren Cave. Reading situations extremely well, shutting down space, and those fractions of a second where Leinster could have cut clean or cut through that defence, but it was nullified because of the reaction time of Cave. So only huge plaudits for the energy and the desire that Ulster brought, but also, you know, the manner in which they went and played and went at Leinster as well. They put together some brilliant passages of play, and you know, the momentum of the game should have been very different after 45 minutes.
Yes, I will come to that in a moment. Jack Conan had an interesting quote, you know, echoes of Ireland. He said, "It's easier to hunt teams. And I think success will be greater if everyone wants to beat us and we still come out on top." So it's interesting. Leinster are certainly in that position now, and they know they are. Leo Cullen said, "We were undercooked. We're just not quite there. And now we have time for before the semis." And as you rightly say, Sexton's going to be back. Robbie Henshaw and Devon Toner trained today for the first time. And so by extension, James Lowe will be back in the mix as well. So you would presume we're going to see a much improved Leinster come semi-final time. But why couldn't they quite get into a rhythm, and not taking anything away from what Ulster did, but just, you know, in terms of if you were to isolate the Leinster performance for a moment, how do they play? Leo Cullen said they're not quite there.
No, I don't think they played brilliant. They didn't play terribly, but they didn't play great. Okay. But a lot of the time they weren't allowed. The game becomes very easy when you start getting yourself over the advantage line and defences get on their heels, whereas Ulster weren't allowing that. Mm. They pick and chose their two-man tackles. What Dan McFarlane was talking about, there were no logs or lying on the ground. Guys back up on their feet, either contesting the ruck or, you know, trying to counter ruck or just getting back into the defensive system. So there was it didn't feel as though they were ever defending with kind of 12 or 13 bodies. It seemed always that they had 15 people trying to have an input into their defensive system. I think that had a knock-on effect. The Leinster's attacking game. They tried to play and trust their passing game, which was maybe a little bit off kilter. And that's the degree of being, you know, very effective against one side and then just not getting it quite right, and the aggressive nature of an opposition's defence being able to snuff you out.
Okay, a follow-on point on that. I want to play a clip. Andy Dunn was in here yesterday and he was talking about how, I suppose, if you're in Ross Byrne's position, how you try and handle a defence like that.
I think yesterday he was guilty, along with a number of the Leinster players, of trying to pass their way out of trouble against the Ulster's rush defence.
Yeah.
They were really, really fast off the line. I think Darren Cave was sweating about ring rolls and didn't give him an inch because he was worried about giving him an inch.
Just a brief tangent. Is that the norm, that type of defence for Ulster?
Not as aggressive, no. They have not been. I covered the Racing game, and it was a group stage match up in Ravenhill, and entirely different.
Yeah. It almost struck me.
It was a bit of an ambush. Like, it was a physical ambush.
You saw what England did against Ireland.
Yeah.
Let's try and replicate that.
Yeah, and I think they did it brilliantly. And it's very hard to commit to that for a long period of time in a game because your energy levels will sap. But as I was saying, where Ross Byrne, as a, I suppose as a younger 10, if he, you know, we saw Owen Farrell and Finn Russell in the Six Nations varying their game by chip kicks and grubber kicks to try and reduce the speed, I suppose, off the line of the opposition defence, where Ross didn't do that. He kept trying to pass his way out of trouble, and a number of times Larmour and Ringrose were caught man and ball. They were trying to pass while being tackled. And
now, quick question there. There would be some... who, if that was an Ireland team who had done the same thing, they would say, well, that was an adherence to a game plan and they didn't have the freedom to react. I would presume that at Leinster they have a bit more freedom if Joe, you know, maybe let's accept Joe Schmidt is probably pretty dogmatic, but I would have thought Lancaster and Cullen would have no problem whatsoever with Ross Byrne going off script.
They wouldn't. But he did, I think the issue was Ross Byrne didn't work it out for himself on the field. I think what happened was...
That can't be that... Not to simplify the game. There's either a rush defence or there's not. So when you have a rush defence, I would have thought...
I think it's harder than you're making out in the sense. Like, it's obvious when you're sitting looking at it that, you know, to put in some variation and put some doubt in the opposition defence's mind. But it takes a lot of confidence for a 10 or anyone in the back line to maybe go off script. I think they're certainly empowered within Leinster to do that.
So a good example there of chump in the stands thinking it's all very easy. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree to the point that the only way to soften a defence up and stop their line speed is by varying your game. And by, you know, that's why you see so often in a game where a team will call a five-man line out early on. And a five-man line out means two forwards drop into the defensive line. And that means you're absolutely hammering off the line. And so many teams go to the chip kick. Because it puts a screw in the opposition's head as to, okay, we're going to play a lot of variety. If you want to play hard, we're going to dink one in behind. And likewise, every so often, from a defensive perspective, you might have a swing, but then other times you'll defend soft. So you have to vary up what you're doing. The difficulty of having a really aggressive defense is that you find yourself... So say in Darren Cave's situation where he's defending out in the 13 channel, if he's charging up, and the ball doesn't go to Gary Ringrose or out to his channel, it's further for him to travel back to get onside and then make that extra effort off the next one. So, and he's right. It does exert an awful lot more pressure, but the way you have to nullify that or modify your game for that is maybe set up a ruck play inside where you're bringing that defense up really hard on the outside, but then try and create really quick ruck ball with a simple switch, ruck over and then play again. And I don't think Ross Byrne or any of them, I don't think he's the only one that's guilty of it. I don't think any of the backs played a second set of eyes for him of saying, let's show a switch play and kick to the corner. We know his success of those kick passes to Adam Byrne and to Dave Carney over the course of the season. Why didn't we see any of that? You tend to only see that now in its penalty advantage. I think that's a way of, particularly with inexperienced defender like Balakun, you know, he was mad keen to come up and absolutely hammer someone. So, and with Mike Lowry in the backfield, you've got to be able to test these guys and you've to adapt your game plan. You know, even though you've something that's worked really well for you for the whole season, when you look at the opposition, you got to play to their perceived weaknesses as well. And I don't think they did that enough. I thought they tried to trust their skill level too much rather than playing a little bit of territory and a little bit more pragmatically.
Okay, very interesting. You mentioned the 45th minute, Jacob Stockdale. Man, I'd say he's feeling terrible. And probably even worse today as the reality of the opportunity Ulster had really hits him. They could have gone 20-11 clear at that point. Unforgivable was the phrase you came out of your mouth on BT.
Yeah. I think in the context of being over the line, of course you're going to forgive someone like him for all that he's achieved, and this is one moment, this is one blip. But I suppose in the context of, you can't be forgiven for not getting the ball down when you're 4 metres over the line and there's barely a tackle being put on you. Maybe that sounds like a contradiction, but I'm trying to take the incident in isolation. I must say I was unbelievably impressed with how he didn't allow it to affect the rest of his game. He had some really big moments. He had some, you know, there was an aerial contest with him and Adam Byrne that was a little subplot, which was intriguing in itself.
He missed four tackles, I think.
Pardon me?
He missed four tackles.
Did he? Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I wasn't aware of that, but And maybe that was in the aftermath. Maybe that was in his head and he was playing. But certainly from what I saw with him, you know, defensively and in the air and going forward, he still didn't let it affect his game. Mm. But you could see him after the final whistle that he knew the impact of his error. Mm. And it's, you know, he's had this meteoric rise and barely put a foot wrong. And, you know, he's not impervious to criticism and he's not impervious to errors. And when it does happen, you know, you'll get scrutinized with that as well as the upside when he scores against the All Blacks. But it's got to be a big learning curve for him. And, you know, I saw that, you know, was it Murray Kinsella posted something about an interview with Nigel Carolyn about always being concerned under 20s about the quality of his put down. So this is an interview going back a year ago. And yes, you know, Murray must have been waiting in, you know, on the sideline to post something like this when it unfortunately did happen. It's a real shame because it was an absolute momentum swing for Ulster. I thought my initial gut reaction is Leinster are in trouble here.
Right.
As soon as he scored the try, I said this is going to be a very, very difficult Ulster team to beat. And then the TMO or the referee immediately called for a TMO ruling on whether the ball was grounded or not. And it was a real get out of jail card for Leinster because they ultimately went up the pitch and scored themselves and retook the lead.
Yeah, what was striking about the Carolyn comments is that it's such a basic you're talking about. I presume that Jacob Stockdale's coaches from the age of 5 years old have been telling them, you know, someday that's going to come back and haunt you. So he's obviously doing it by choice. You know, we're saying it's a learning curve and I doubt he'll ever do it again, but he would have known for a long time that what he was doing was not suggested as best practice. He was just doing it anyway.
But he obviously hasn't had one of those errors before. He hasn't had one, or if he has, maybe it happened in a game where it didn't matter. In my career, I had one where I was just going over the line and Rapini Kaukanabuka slapped it out of my hand. But no one remembers that because we beat Agen by 90 points and I scored a hat-trick on the day. So I never scored four in another game thereafter, but no one remembers that. No. I do. And I was embarrassed by it. But yeah, it's just that everyone's watching. Everyone in Europe was watching this. And it was such a pivotal moment in the game that, you know, it will be very, very difficult viewing, you know, the papers yesterday and waking up today and the reality that, you know, they don't have a semi-final to play for where maybe they should have.
A fairly sickening feeling, I think, for everyone when Dan Levy went down. It's horrible for him personally, awful, horrible for Leinster, horrible for Ireland. He's out of the World Cup. Complicated ligament damage was the Leinster press release today. So he's been ruled out of the World Cup officially. He was pretty much heading towards a starter for World Cup, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, certainly the way the Six Nations had gone, the way Sean O'Brien hasn't been able to rediscover that form of probably 2 years ago now around the Lions tour where we felt as though he was, you know, arguably the best seven in the world. That has, you know, that has seemed to pass him by a little bit. His opportunities, he hasn't taken them. Josh van der Vliers had been unlucky with injury. If anything, Jordy Murphy is probably the guy now that was going to, you know, be contesting for the number seven jersey hardest with Levy. He hasn't really been given that much of a chance, but with Ulster this season, when he has played for Ireland, he's been very effective. And again, Joe Schmidt's a big fan of his. Mm. So you did get the sense that Dan Levy were just waiting for him to get back to full fitness and that he would be the starter for Ireland come World Cup time, the way the last 2 months have panned out. Sickening blow for him. I was watching the game and I could see immediately when he got caught and the hands went up to his face and I knew that it was a bad one. And you know, the Piero guy, the guy who draws to be able to recall back some of the footage was showing it beside me and I couldn't watch it. I saw it to the point of where the force came against him and at that point it was nasty. So, you know, talks are really with him. It sounds like a horrendous injury. I think the concern is that it's not just his World Cup, you know, potentially gone. When you're talking about that complicated an injury that early on, you know, a couple of days after the incident, you know, potentially there's you know, bigger ramifications about how serious an injury it could be. So I just hope that it is something that he can recover from and he's got a lot of good years ahead of him.
He sure does. We wish him well. A quick word on the Toulouse game then before we move on to Munster. 28-27 in Toulouse in October, I think it was. And then a lot of people will remember January where at the RDS it was windy and miserable and cold and Leinster kind of controlled the game. 29-13 was the final scoreline. That's Toulouse's only defeat in 21 matches. Would that give you much confidence, that performance in January, or will this be such a different game on a faster pitch in better weather?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think it will be a very different game. I think the confidence that they will have generated from a relative unbeaten run, other than that Leinster blip, can't be overstated. It's a young group. It's a perfect balance between the Joe Tucouris and the Jerome Kynos and the Charlie Famuinas in the pack, and then these young brave backs where they're willing to try things. And what I was most impressed was with them, when you're a number down, first of all, it's don't panic and don't feel too sorry for yourself. You got to get over that. But then when you're on the back foot and you're defending your own line, to be able to see opportunity from there rather than just relieving pressure, I think is a real testament of a quality side. And how they were all on the same page. It really was Toulouse from old, where maybe the best attacking place is turnover on your own goal line, because the attacking team is disjointed, and all of a sudden they have to think defense. And they ran that one that they ran from their own goal line, where they won a scrum against the feed, and then ultimately led to a score down the other end. That was a really remarkable piece of skill and bravery from them. And the likes of Colby and Goodtan was really good. This new under-20s winger was phenomenal. Yeah. Some of the touches that he had were remarkable. And to think that he was a late call-in for Huge, Tozan, wasn't it? He looked as though he was a seasoned international with the selection of passes and offloads that he providing. So
yeah.
I think it's a real, real opportunity for them to obviously get after that first. They want to be the first team to win five, and you're going to have one team given the opportunity in the final to look for five Heineken Cups.
Yeah, no, it should be amazing. It's worth watching back the highlights on YouTube if you didn't catch it. Even the Maidar try, the pass out wide, and it was just sensational rugby. And the two tries, if you take it, that Teddy Thomas was an intercept, and then the line out was a bit of a mess and it fell to Colby and he missed it. They've kept the best attack in the top 14 to no tries on their home turf, which is really impressive stuff. We are talking rugby here. Our coverage is in association with Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. Edinburgh 13, Munster 17. it can kind of feel a bit old-fashioned to talk about things like Heineken Champions Cup DNA and heritage and all this stuff, and that sports science and best practice has almost eradicated this. But then, like, Munster go and do these mad things, and you think, how did they win that game?
Yeah, I've given up on thinking about form book going into quarterfinals when Munster are involved, or whether it's a home or away game. You just feel as though that they will get the job done, and they've proven it time and time again. There's no reason to doubt them anymore. They faltered a little bit of the semi-final stage over the course of the last 5 or 6 years. But a quarter-final, they just know how to get it done. And that would have been the draw that they would have liked the most. It was the most favourable draw to go to Edinburgh, even though they've got a good home record in the Pro 14 and in Europe. They would have fancied their chances. They would know Edinburgh very well. And would have felt that on the big stage that they were more capable of delivering when the pressure came on, which proved to be the case. They weren't at their best. Edinburgh certainly squandered opportunities, particularly turning down those early goal chances. I don't know what that's about in the modern game.
Can I interrupt there and ask? Can I ask about that? I mean, you've sort of answered the question I was going to ask. You don't know what that's about in the modern game, but like Ireland do it traditionally more and more. We saw, I mean, Munster themselves on 52 minutes kicked for the corner and almost got lucky. It led to the Tadhg Byrne incident a few minutes later, but they shunned down points as well. Like in your day, which isn't that far ago, statistically, had you guys come to the conclusion it was just better to take the risk, or why is this happening now, do you know?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's a confidence that I didn't understand as captain to go to the corner and back yourself. But actually, statistically, particularly in the Six Nations, you know, teams that turn down points offering and going to the corner, it's the statistics and the ratio of scores to coming away with nothing is really poor on the scorefront.
I think there were like three mole tries from something like 50 lineouts.
Yeah, so which would make you believe that you've got to keep, you know, when I sit in the studio watching Six Nations with Johnny Wilkinson, he shakes his head because he's taking the decision out away from his captain. He goes up and owns that and goes, pick a goal before a decision comes along. And that's what you want as a captain. You want your 10 to come in and go, kick a goal. But yet, you know, if you're going to kick to the corner, you've got to score 2 out of 3 or probably not even 1 out of 3. You got to score 2 out of 3, and I don't get it. And teams have suffered as a result of this. You know, they've lost by 1, 2, or 3 points where they've squandered 6 or 9 points. And it's also building. It's what Munster used to do brilliantly in the 2000s was build 3, 6, 9, and then they got a try.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden they're out of sight.
No, it's
all
true.
All of a sudden it's 9, and they got a converted try. It's 16, game over. And that's what sides aren't willing to do. They're willing to chase the tries early on. Why not get some points on the board and wait for that score? And then all of a sudden it's a 2-score game. And, you know, everyone relaxes, momentum shifts, and then, you know, the opposition tighten up. It's an anomaly. Well, it's not even an anomaly anymore. It's a new occurrence that I don't understand.
Yeah, no, it sure is. And Joey Carberry hasn't missed a kick since Castro away. Blindell obviously was kicking well.
I'll probably be referred to as the old codger that doesn't get the modern workings of the game.
Totally. Like you're one step short of saying kids these days. So, look, Munster have conceded the fewest tries and the fewest points in both the Pro 14 and the Champions Cup, and that was clearly the bedrock of the performance in Edinburgh. So let's take that as read, excuse the pun, and say that is in the bank for Saracens away. There was always a sense that they're going to progress. They have to put a few more wrinkles in attack, and the Gloucester performances, Joey Carberry was to the fore, and there was a sense that actually they're developing a game plan here, more so in attack. And yet, you know, maybe they belie analysis because they just managed to keep getting it done, but yeah, they didn't manage to exert any control in this game really from an attacking point of view. And even their try, the two tries were odd in certain respects. Like, that has to be a worry, that at this stage they didn't really manage to put anything together in attack, or did they? Am I overlooking something?
No, I think there's a fairness to what you're saying. They will be ultimately a bit disappointed with their performance because they've taken advantage of two quick opportunities, great bit of quick thinking from Keith Earls for the first one, and then, you know, fortunate to perhaps get a penalty reversal and get that opportunity to score a good try. It was a well-worked try, you know, stemming from a great break from Conor Murray and some quality passing and a nice finish. So don't take that away, but you can't rely in bigger games against better opposition on opportunistic moments. You've got to build momentum and build an ability to control the game and force pressure on the opposition, particularly someone like Saracens. They looked pretty wicked from what I've seen of the Glasgow game as well. No panic and go, I'm conceding an early try. And was it 8 or 9 tries I think they scored in that one in a quarter final. Munster will have to up their game considerably if they're to stay in that league with a team very hungry to get back to the top of Europe. You can sense from last year their disappointment in the Leinster defeat in the quarterfinal that I think they're the team to beat now this year. I just think they've got the bit between the teeth.
And in the dressing room, would you be going up to Tadhg Byrne and saying, Tadhg, this is rugby, we don't do that?
Well, see, if he's your teammate, you go, thanks for milking us the penalty.
Yeah.
And if you're looking from outside, you go, come on, get up and, this, in the words of Nigel Owens, this isn't soccer, lads. So, I've seen some stuff on social media and people not happy with The manner in which he threw himself to the ground. There was no doubt he gets impacted, but it's a big sell, and I think that's what the dramatics of the fall definitely is what caught the TMO's eye and going back to foul play. Ultimately, it is a penalty.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to sell it that way. I don't think it's a good look for our game.
One very last one on Munster. Like, Carberry's hamstring again must be a worry. They're saying they're hopeful, but like, that game's in 3 weeks. You figure he'll have to be ready to train reasonably well in just 2 weeks, and hamstrings are tricky. There was a time when Blyndall was somebody they had real high hopes for. He came on and did really well. They may well need him to do very well against Saracens. Where do you rate Blyndall?
Yeah, he had a really great season 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
He's been plagued with injury. I think he's a very nice footballer, sees the game very well. So what an able replacement to have if Joey Carberry's not fit. From X-factor point of view, you're losing a bit, but from a control aspect of understanding how to move a team forward and pick the right option, I think you've got a great playmaker in him. So I don't think all is lost if Carberry doesn't play, but you do want your best players on the biggest occasion.
Mm.
And I think Blyndall definitely has a game control that Carberry is yearning to and learning over the course of his time playing in the number 10 jersey down there. He's not quite there yet, but he's certainly getting there with some of his performances. But it's a nice predicament to find themselves in if they do lose their number one, that their number two is a close second.
Okay. Connacht then finally they were fighting on two fronts. They lost 20 points to 10 against Sale. They did leave a number of players on the bench, the likes of Tom Farrell, who's been in great form, and Ulton Delan. They're in the Pro 14 playoff spots. Andy Friend said afterwards, "We played a bit too much rugby, made too many mistakes." You saw a bit of this game?
Yeah, I did. I kind of saw about half an hour of the first half. They did. I think I'd agree with that in that. Sometimes when you're playing with a team that's not first team, you throw caution to the wind. And it was clear that the statement in their team was that they didn't feel as though they were capable of pushing on both fronts, that the focus was definitely on a top three finish in their conference rather than potentially winning this away quarter final and then two more games to get that ultimate European Champions Cup slot for next year. So seeing the likes of Buckley and Beelam on the bench and Farrell and Delan not starting either, I think that says it all, that they felt as though this was maybe a lesser opportunity than the one that's going to present itself over the course of the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Mm.
And that they didn't have the depth of squad that would have necessitated to get both jobs done. Unfortunately, they've now a couple of injuries. I think Carty picked up an injury, so Beelam picked up a season-ending injury as well. So not only have they lost the game, they've also potentially lost a couple of their important players. So it was a difficult weekend for them, but they'll lick their wounds and they'll still fancy their chances in the coming weeks.
Yeah, we'll see how they go. Listen, bring on Easter weekend. It should be good. Thanks a million.
Nice one. Cheers.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.